Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Frances Alonso reporting. From the White House, the Pentagon, world leaders, and Muslim advocacy groups, there's come a barrage of criticism for billionaire Donald Trump after the leading U.S. Republican presidential candidate called for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States. White House spokesman Josh Earnest Tuesday called Trump's rhetoric offensive and toxic, and saying his plan disqualifies him from serving as president. Across the Atlantic, British Prime Minister David Cameron called Trump's plan divisive, unhelpful, and quite simply wrong. Ibrahim Cooper, the director of the Council on American-Islamic Relations, had an especially blistering response to Trump's demand. He says, "We're entering into the realm of the fascists now," he said. "It should be disturbing not only to American Muslims, but it should be disturbing to all Americans." At least seven people were killed in Burundi's capital, Bujumbura, during a night of violence in districts where months of protests took place against President Pierre Nkurunziza, according to police and witnesses. Police said residents said that police shot and killed five men after house-to-house searches in the early hours of Wednesday, when gunfire could be heard echoing around Bujumbura. A police spokesman said police officers were responding to grenade attacks. Rwanda is set to vote next week on a constitutional amendment that will allow President Paul Kagame to run for a third term in 2017 and potentially remain in power until 2034. The Rwandan government announced late Tuesday that the referendum will be held on December 17th for Rwandans living abroad and December 18th for those living in Rwanda. VOA News. Hundreds of people are leaving the last rebel-held section in the Syrian city of Homs Wednesday. It's part of a local peace deal with the government. In addition to opposition fighters leaving, hundreds of civilians are boarding buses out of the area. This is Homs Governor Talal Barzai. He says around 300 armed people, in addition to 100 families, are leaving. He equates about 400 women and children, as well as some civilians. Once the rebel fighters leave, the Syrian government will be in full control of Homs. A U.S. official added to the criticism of Russia's military campaign in Syria, saying Wednesday only 30% of Russian airstrikes have targeted Islamic State militants. U.S. Envoy Brett McGurk, who met with U.S. and Iraqi military leaders in Baghdad Wednesday, said the other 70% of Russia's airstrikes in Syria have hit opposition groups. With time running out at climate talks near Paris, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has urged nations to set aside differences and reach a strong deal that puts the planet on a more sustainable trajectory. For VOA, Lisa Bryant reports.
Secretary of State Kerry summed up his message in just a few words.
Our task is clear. Our moment is now. Let's get this job done.
Negotiators now have less than 2 days to reach an agreement aimed to limit global warming to 2 degrees Celsius or less over pre-industrial levels. French Foreign Minister Laurent Fabius, who is presiding over the talks outside Paris, says a new draft introduced Wednesday is whittled down. It's now 29 pages instead of 43. Delegates face a Thursday deadline to produce a climate plan that can be formally adopted on Friday. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
French officials say they have identified the third attacker who died in the attacks on Paris's Bataclan concert hall November 13th. Officials announced Wednesday that the attacker was from Strasbourg and is believed to have traveled to Syria in late 2013. Meanwhile, French media have identified the suspect as 23-year-old Fouad Mohamed Agad through a DNA match. Time magazine Wednesday named German Chancellor Angela Merkel as its Person of the Year in 2015, hailing her leadership. This is Time editor Nancy Gibbs.
Chancellor Angela Merkel is our 2015 Person of the Year. And in a year where world leaders were tested all through the year, no one was tested the way she was.
The magazine said the German chancellor has stepped in every time a serious crisis had threatened European statecraft this year. I'm Frances Alonso in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
With time running out at climate talks near Paris, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has urged nations to set aside differences and to reach a strong deal that puts the planet on a more sustainable trajectory. He also announced the U.S. will double grants for poor nations to adapt to climate change to $860 million.
That's Lisa Bryant reporting from Paris. Details coming up. Also in the news, the World Health Organization has deployed an emergency response team to Ethiopia, which is facing its worst drought in decades. And President Muhammadu Buhari has reportedly said he could extend his December deadline for Nigeria's military to defeat Boko Haram. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on African News Tonight. Our top story this hour, with time running out at climate talks near Paris, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry issued a powerful appeal for nations to set aside differences and reach a strong deal that put the planet on a more sustainable trajectory. He also announced the U.S. will double grants for poor nations to adapt to climate change to $860 million. For VOA, Lisa Bryant has more on the talks from Paris.
With just hours left to go to reach a climate deal, Secretary of State Kerry summed up his message in just a few words.
Our task is clear. Our moment is now. Let's get this job done.
Negotiators now have less than 2 days to reach an agreement aimed to limit global warming to 2 degrees Celsius or less over pre-industrial levels. French Foreign Minister Laurent Fabius, who is presiding over the talks outside Paris, says a new draft introduced Wednesday is whittled down. It's now 29 pages instead of 43, and agreement appears close in areas like climate change adaptation and technology transfer to poorer countries.
Et j'ai noté que trois questions transversales devront faire l'objet.
But Fabius said three key sticking points remain: differentiation or distinctions between rich and poor nations in fighting climate change, climate financing, and how ambitious the Paris Agreement should be. Kerry said any deal reached in Paris should be considered a start and not an end in cutting carbon emissions. He directed part of his message to developing countries as he urged greater compromise in reaching a deal.
If all the industrial nations went down to zero emissions, remember what I just said, all the industrial nations went down to zero emissions, it wouldn't be enough. Not when more than 65% of the world's carbon pollution comes from the developing world.
He also appeared to direct his message closer to home, where some Americans question whether climate change exists or man's role in causing it. Even if the vast majority of science proves wrong and climate skeptics are right, he said, the world is still better off with a climate deal.
But on the other side of the ledger, if the scientists are right and the climate skeptics are wrong, we face catastrophe. It's that simple. That is the choice.
Delegates face a Thursday deadline to produce a climate plan that can be formally adopted on Friday. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Various groups seeking to cut greenhouse gas emissions are at COP21. They are holding talks with like-minded NGOs and policymakers on how to make progress. Heather Allen is with the Partnership on Sustainable Low-Carbon Transport. VOA's Kim Lewis talked with Ms. Allen about her group's mission.
I work on sustainable transport with the Paris Process on Mobility and Climate, which is part of the Sustainable Low Carbon Transport Partnership. And we've made a partnership with Michelin Challenge Bibendum to bridge that gap between the private sector and the public sector. So we're a not-for-profit, but we really have worked on bringing the transport community together under this PPMC, this Paris Process on Mobility and Climate. And one of the things that we really see is that there is not enough engagement in this whole process on transport. Transport is going to really deliver part of the climate change benefits, and at the moment it is the sector that is, the emissions from the sector are growing fastest. So now they are around a quarter of all energy-related emissions come from transport worldwide. So in the future, obviously, a lot of the developing world is going to want to build their economies, and they need to do this via transport. Transport has this way of bringing the economic development and economic benefits to everybody. But this must be done in a sustainable and climate-friendly way.
And also, how do you get young people interested in going about doing this?
So it's really important that the young people realize this connection of transport and climate change. And that's part of the reason why we've put together this session. So we've got a three-hour session today here at COP21. And we're bringing together not only a lot of young people who will be presenting on the panel, including our superhero from Mexico. He's going to be here on Skype, which is a very low-carbon way of presenting it at conferences. We're going to play a game around transport called Transport Bingo. We're going to try and engage much more with the youth. We've got a message from the UN Youth Envoy about how transport and youth can grow together. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to bring all the different solutions and opportunities that there are for youth to engage better with the transport community on the one hand, because it's not a very easy community to engage with, and that's why we've tried to federate the sector a little bit. And secondly, that, as we mentioned before, you know, none of the wind farms can be built unless the construction materials are transported to these places. None of the other aspects that will go on with different sectors can really be fully utilized in the climate actions unless transport is at the heart of it.
And what do you hope to gain from this COP21?
Well, I've been working on this issue since COP9, and I've seen a huge, huge amount of progress on that. In COP9, when the transport sector kind of reared its head, everyone said, what are you doing here? Huh? You're part of the energy world. If we fix energy, we'll fix transport. So I now see here in COP21, we've had over 30 different side events. We have organized a huge and very successful LPAA focus on transport. We have 15 initiatives from the sector committing to decarbonize and improve the emission profile of the sector. This is all incredible. So I feel that transport is no longer the forgotten orphan of energy as it was 10 years ago, and it's now beginning to take its proper place within the climate negotiations.
That was VOA's Kim Lewis at the COP21 conference in Paris. She was speaking with Heather Allen of the Partnership on Sustainable Low Carbon Development. The World Health Organization has deployed an emergency response team to Ethiopia, which is facing its worst drought in decades. It warns food insecurity could worsen multiple epidemics and put millions at risk. VOA's Jody Kapowa reports.
The World Health Organization says Ethiopia is facing its worst drought in 30 years. But the humanitarian group Save the Children goes even further, calling it the worst in 50 years. Ethiopia has had two poor growing seasons this year due to delayed rains. Dr. Michelle Geyer is the WHO's Director of Emergency Risk Management and Humanitarian Response.
The crisis in Ethiopia has been triggered by El Nino. This weather phenomenon basically triggered drought in large parts of Ethiopia and flooding in other parts. As a result of this, there's been a huge amount of food insecurity in the country and malnutrition and displacement of populations as a result.
That makes people more vulnerable to communicable or infectious diseases.
Malnutrition, for example, in children increases the fact that someone will catch a disease and get pneumonia or diarrhea or malaria, but it also increases the severity of the disease, which means that children, if not seen very quickly, will die very quickly.
The WHO estimates that 400,000 children in Ethiopia will face severe malnutrition in 2016. Another 1 million children and about 700,000 pregnant or breastfeeding women are expected to face moderate malnutrition. Dr. Geyer says there are several disease outbreaks now underway in the country.
These include measles, watery diarrhea because of issues related to poor water and sanitation. There's already meningitis going on. There are cases of dengue fever, and there are almost 250,000 cases of scabies.
The WHO's emergency response team is lending its support to Ethiopia's Ministry of Health.
We have deployed to try and support the Ministry of Health to scale up operations in the country so that we can, with the ministry as well as partners in health, make sure that we can actually deliver health services, so primary health care and hospital care, for all these children that need medical care when they become very severely malnourished and develop these diseases.
The WHO ranks emergencies on a scale of 1 to 3, with 3 being the highest. Syria and Iraq are grade 3. Ethiopia is currently a grade 2. The WHO says the 1982 to 84 food crisis in Ethiopia was the most severe ever recorded and was attributed to the effects of El Nino and war. During that time, famine struck Ethiopia. Hundreds of thousands died, but millions suffered. Much has been done since then to avoid a repeat of that tragedy, including early warning systems and a better understanding of climate change and weather patterns. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
You are listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Huhib in Washington. Seventeen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has announced the U.S. will double grants for poor nations to adapt to climate change to $860 million. And the World Health Organization has deployed an emergency response team to Ethiopia, which is facing its worst drought in decades, and would like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237. Kenya's Interior Minister says reports of an alleged mass grave discovered in northeastern Kenya earlier this week are false. Mohamed Yusuf has the story from Nairobi.
Speaking to reporters in Nairobi Wednesday, Kenya's Interior Minister Joseph Nkaiseri said there is no mass grave in Mandera County near the Somali border. On Tuesday, government security agencies accompanied by the local leaders went to the area and excavated 15 sites.
I wish to inform the country and the world at large that nothing was found in any of those sites. Today, following insistence by the political leaders that people may have been buried deep into the ground, excavators have been brought in the site to dig for the body, and nothing was found.
The Interior Minister said a shallow grave was found that contained a woman's body, but say they don't know how she died.
She's alleged to have been a cook for Al-Shabaab in Bulahawa, and when Al-Shabaab also overrun or were rooted out of Bulahawa, she ran to Kenya, she ran to Mandera, and she started working in a job selling fish.
The reports of the alleged mass grave had once again raised concerns about extrajudicial killings. Human rights organizations have accused security agencies of killing and disappearing terror suspects as they hunt Al-Shabaab, something that security agencies deny. The state-funded Kenya National Commission on Human Rights said in April it had found mass graves that contained 11 people in Wajir County, also in the northeast. The Interior Ministry has called on leaders from Mandera County, who alleged the existence of mass graves this week, to issue an apology. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Rwandans are scheduled to vote on December 18th on whether to let President Paul Kagame run for a third term. The referendum will decide whether the constitutional limit of two terms can be changed. Mr. Kagame, who is 58, has served as president since 2000. A change in the constitution could permit him to run for three more consecutive terms in office, ending in 2034. Mr. Kagame recently said he would not make a decision until after the referendum. Major donor countries such as the United States have opposed a change in the constitution. As registration of refugees in Germany nears 1 million this year, Chancellor Angela Merkel has been named Person of the Year by the U.S. weekly news magazine Time. The magazine's editors selected the German leader for her role in the European Union's migrant crisis. Time's editor says Germany has welcomed refugees as casualties of radical Islamist savagery, not carriers of it. Germany's interior minister says his country has registered more than 964,000 asylum seekers in the first 11 months of the year. Only a few of the 28 member states of the EU have welcomed migrants in recent months. The UN High Commissioner for Refugees says it is the duty of all 47 members of the Council of Europe to offer asylum. Antonio Guterres says granting asylum is an international law and a fundamental value of the European nations. Meanwhile, 12 migrants drowned today when a wooden boat carrying about 50 people began to fall apart and sink shortly after leaving the Turkish coast. Six of the dead are children. At least 12 people are still missing. Niger is planning to return about 500 Boko Haram prisoners to Nigeria in order to relieve its overcrowded prisons. The prisoners are being held in Kolo, Kutakale, and Difa, a city near the Nigerian border. The transfer has been planned in cooperation with the Nigerian military. Difa has been under attack many times by Boko Haram militants based in Nigeria. It has been placed under a state of emergency and a night curfew during the violence. And President Muhammadu Buhari has reportedly said he could extend his December deadline for Nigeria's military to defeat Boko Haram. The military says progress has been made, but the group is still carrying out hit-and-run attacks in Nigeria and neighboring countries. VOA's Chris Stein reports from Lagos.
Defense spokesman Rabe Abubakar says the military has cleared Boko Haram militants out of territory they once held and degraded their capabilities. But he said troops cannot prevent attacks on bus stations and marketplaces.
Suicide bombing and other attack on soft targets is something which no military can overnight wipe out.
The Borno state capital, Maiduguri, has been hard hit by the group's six-year quest to impose strict Islamic law in Nigeria's north. Eight people were killed late last month when a suicide bomber attacked a crowd of displaced people that were traveling into the city. But resident Aliu Biu says the city has overall become safer.
You see, presently, we sleep with our eyes closed. We move along the highway with no blockade. We no longer experience people going into houses to slaughter people. We don't experience gunshots right, left, and center.
But two soldiers deployed about 50 kilometers away from Maiduguri told VOA the insurgents still control three local government areas of Borno State. The soldiers said they lack ammunition and adequate weaponry to fight the militants. Nigeria's military has long been dogged by complaints that its soldiers are ill-equipped to defeat the insurgency. Last month, authorities charged the National Security Advisor under former President Goodluck Jonathan with money laundering. Buhari has accused the former security advisor of stealing billions of dollars meant to equip the country's soldiers. Boko Haram is not a threat to Nigeria alone. Cameroon and Niger continue to report attacks in border areas. And at least 27 people died last week in suicide bombings in Chad, targeting a market on an island in Lake Chad. Coordinating regional efforts remains a challenge. Troops from Niger, Chad, and Cameroon launched operations against Boko Haram in early 2015. However, they are supposed to be transformed into an internationally backed regional force with Nigeria and joined by troops from Benin. That force is still not operational. Senior research fellow at the South Africa-based Institute for Security Studies, David Zunmeno, says deployment has been hobbled by the plunging price of crude, which is vital to both Chad and Nigeria's economies, as well as distrust between the region's leaders. But he warns failing to deploy the force would only aid the insurgency.
It will be a big blow and of opportunities to Boko Haram and other radical groups that African leaders are not really serious about challenging them.
Boko Haram has forced 2.1 million people out of their homes. Many fear to go home because of continued insecurity and loss of homes and jobs in retaken territory in the northeast. Boko Haram violence killed over 6,000 people last year, according to the Global Terrorism Index, and by all accounts, the group has killed several thousand more in 2015. Chris Stein for VOA News, Lagos.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Martin Kersius, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, democracy wins with a smooth transition of power in Burkina Faso. President-elect Roch Marc Christian Kabore soundly defeated the opposition in the first free and competitive vote since independence. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC when host Shaka Sali and his guests discuss Burkina Faso's future under the new leadership of Kabore.
VOA News. VOA.
When news breaks, VOA News is there. Around the clock, listen to VOA Newscast at the top of each hour, along with our detailed news programs and analysis.
We are online at voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.
With your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best Pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This one I get, this one I get.
Every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists, too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best. Right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I am James Butte, host of Daybreak Africa. Join me every weekday mornings at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports.
My name is Edward Ameyibo. I listen to Daybreak Africa to be abreast with developments on the continent. I encourage you to do the same.
You can also be a part of the show through our listener's mail segment. Just send your views to daybreakafrica@voanews.com or call us on 202-205-9942. That's Daybreak Africa, your breakfast show at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.